Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Off the ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
And we shall wonder if one day our game is played on the other planets. We will have interplanetary competitions.
Your job now is to stand by our new manager.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
If my granny had balls, you'd be my granddad.
Big Sam Aladicio, that's on it.
John Terry looking on at Stamford Bridge as Chelsea leads Southampton by 3-1, 62 minutes on the clock. On the show this evening, we'll talk to Craig Hope over in Newcastle as Rafa and his boys are back up to the Premier League. We'll see, will Rafa join them next season? We are also bringing you some Terry McDermott, who was, as we've been discussing all evening, been a theme of man love and sexiness generally on the show this evening, Kev, as you know. Terry McDermott was a scorer of some sexy goals.
Oh.
The competition, the technique here, he just lifted it up with the right foot, and as it dropped he crashed it, it's gone just beneath the Tottenham crossbar. It's a wonderful strike, fabulous improvisation and superb skill from Terry McDermott.
Johnson, and Johnson the ball into acres of empty space for Highway. And Highway, a brilliant crossback. McDermott it was who finished it. And what a classic goal. Glorious long passes. Johnson finding Highway. Highway with lots of space. A great quick crossback. And the flying dive by McDermott to make it 7-0.
There we go, some sexy goals there. Even the sound you made as I threw to the montage was sexy. Some sexy goals.
Oh.
Yeah. Terry McDermott, a lot of people texting to say very underrated player, three European Cups with Liverpool, six league titles, PFA, players, player of the year, goal of the season 1 year, writers, player of the year. And he coached you at Huddersfield, so you knew him. He was thrilled when he saw that you were interviewing him. I saw he was looking over when he walked in. He couldn't believe it. Kev, he's just like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, well, that's exactly, that's what many people think, Joe, when they hear me on off the ball alongside you.
Danny you on Danny said, Terry Mack always got old sayings mixed up, according to Kevin Keegan. Macca once told Andy Cole, Andy, the world is your lobster. Could that be true?
That's very true. Very true. Yeah, yeah. He wasn't known for his intellect, was Terry. But Terry, yeah, what a character. It was a great. But I mean, 25 England caps, Joe. And Kevin Keegan speaks about. Kevin Keegan writes a foreword for the book as well, and speaks about him being very underrated, very unassuming as well, very laid back, perhaps too laid back at times, probably affected him at certain spells through his certain Liverpool career when he first went in. So he's a character with many different traits, but yeah, superb, albeit, yeah.
Yeah, good. And younger listeners would remember him more so for being alongside Kevin Keegan at Newcastle during the great years.
Yeah, that's the thing.
92 to 98, he was there at Newcastle as assistant.
That's it, yeah. And it's probably it's in my memory thinking of Terry McDermott as well. That's the one thing. I knew he was a fabulous player, but different time, different era, not seeing as much TV on football. But that was the one, Joel, that sticks in my mind, I think, with him anyway, definitely, yeah.
He coached you at Huddersfield. And you were saying he wasn't necessarily a new age tactician. He was a bit more old school, bit of a vibes man. And Sam Allardyce, when Terry was there at Newcastle, went back to Newcastle. You were saying Allardyce, even though Allardyce hadn't brought him into the club, he really trusted McDermott's thoughts in a player. McDermott was not one to mince his words. If a player was useless, he was being called useless. He knew what he was looking for in a player, and Allardyce kind of respected that.
Allardyce, I think, wanted that and, yeah, respected him more so for that as well, because a lot of the people, usually what you would find, certainly coaching staff, people around the manager would always be telling the manager perhaps what he wants to hear.
Right.
You're right, boss. But Terry was never like that. Kevin Keegan certainly appreciated that about him as well. In his, I think it was five spells, I think, in all he had at Newcastle. Four or five spells, I think it was, as a player twice, coach, and on the coaching staff twice as well. Mm. He he outlived a lot of managers there at Newcastle. And as you say, when Sam Allardyce then came in, he kept Terry McDermott around because he wanted him around. He wanted that sort of knowledge from him from a personal point of view about the player. Mm-hmm. And Terry McDermott usually would make his mind up quite quickly on things, yeah.
The autobiography, Terry Mac, Living for the Moment, is out now. So where are we diving in on this interview you recorded earlier?
Yeah, so we'll jump into the conversation with Terry talking about going from street football days in Liverpool, well, Kirby, sorry, it was, right. To Bury in the old fourth division.
You know, we couldn't afford a ball. Sometimes, you know, well, yes, we got a ball, but first you were in trouble because we couldn't have one. And what we used to do, it screwed the head off off a doll, me sister's doll, and then play football with the doll's head. And that's what we did because we couldn't afford things like that. And then, yeah. Obviously, when we went to, we call it Royal Kirby now, but it's just when you look back on all them things, we used to play, I used to play Eden just against the wall, Eden fed all day just playing, and he'd get to 280 and I'd be up to 300 and he'd go to 350 and I'd be, that's all we had, because we didn't have field to go and play on, because like what we call in Liverpool, Ollers, it was just like Oller, waste world, you throw all the bins and everything, we used to play football in them, and it was just... So it was a great bring-up, because it made you aware, aware of what goes on in football, you know. When I went to Bury, and I didn't want to leave Kirby to go and live in Bury, because I didn't even know where Bury was.
That's all you said. Where's Bury? When you were at
I hadn't got a clue. And he said, "Oh, it's about Manchester area." I said, "All right." So I was travelling from to and fro. And then eventually it was too much, so I stayed in Bury. I got digs right opposite the grounds. And I loved it there. I just loved playing there. And I always remember when Newcastle came in for me after that, I wasn't going to go to Newcastle. They were in the first division and they were in the fourth division.
Yeah, you're thinking, Bury, where's Bury? Where the hell's Newcastle then to you?
No,
then?
That was even worse, wasn't it? So he said, and then I got told they were coming to watch me play, and then they came to watch me play, and we played. We were supposed to play Reading, and Joe Harvey came to watch the game with the chief scout, Len Richley, and he came to watch me play. And when he got there, an hour before kick-off, the referee called it off because of fog. That's the best thing they'd ever done, could they sign me a week later? I could have played absolute rubbish that day, and I would never have got to that level, you know, certainly with Newcastle. And the game was called off, and a week later, I got a call. They want to sign you. So obviously I went over and signed for him, played in the reserves, and I got told this afterwards off Joe Harvey. I played in the reserve game at night, and he couldn't believe it. He turned round to Len Richard, who was a scout, and said to him, "What have we signed here?" He actually said that. He said, "What have we signed here?" He said, "Fucking a lunatic." And he just, I was just kicking anyone that come there, because I was used to it in Bury. Yeah. And I'm now, all of a sudden, I'm in like the reserves of the First Division. And he said, "My God, we can't have him as a footballer." Cause I had a terrible reputation when I was a kid. You know, I had to go through, I don't know, it's not Portman Square in London, where you have to go to see all the beaks of football, and then, you know, the tribunals and all that. And they called me in.
Oh, because that was your disciplinary record then, yeah.
They said, "It's the worst that we've ever seen ever in football. You're it's disgusting." Cause I was just punching people in them. And that's all I knew at Bury and, you know, schools and that, you know, just punched them and getting sent off, and it was unbelievable. But, you know, I quickly learned that you can't keep doing that.
But that was a big move for you, though. You've gone from the fourth tier, the fourth division as it was in those days, to the first division, and you would have known, you'd have been more than aware of Newcastle, the size on the club and the history that goes with Newcastle at that time. Were you intimidated going up there? Did you embrace it? From reading things about you, reading stuff, Kevin Keating, it's like you had this carefree attitude. And where does this come from? But so, how does it feel then going into Newcastle? And do you just feel as all right? Okay, I'll take this in my stride.
Yeah,
no,
because it wasn't Liverpool. You know, I'm Liverpool with my team, and then I'm going to Newcastle. I'm thinking, you're right. Where's Newcastle? And then obviously it's a long way away. I know that now because I travel every other week, going up from Liverpool to Newcastle, and it's a long way, believe me. And it was even worse then because there were no motorways. Yeah. So,
what did you do for travelling? Because you got the train a lot from Bury to Liverpool to back to Kirby when you were a kid. Did you have a car at this stage then, did you?
I actually had a car, but I left it there one night because I wouldn't go outside Bury's ground, and it was a torrential rain, and all the rain got into all the car, and it was just a wreck. And I bought it off a fella called Ray Parry, who was a great footballer for Bury. And I bought it off him. It was absolute useless. I paid, £400 for it, and that was a lot of money for me then. Then all of a sudden, when I went to Newcastle, and I got a sign and on fee, only a small sign and on fee of £2,000 or something like that. Where did I go? Straight to Capri. And I thought I'd made it then. Yeah. Oh,
you're the dogs in
I've
that.
I've got
then.
The cigars out now. I'm playing for Berwick, playing for Newcastle, and I'm driving at Capri.
You said they went in the reserve. How quickly did you get into the first team then?
Yeah, that was where the luck come in, really. A fella called Tony Green, who played for Blackpool in England. Great, great player. And he got injured. And I'd played a couple of reserve games, and he couldn't believe how bad I was. And I just wanted to fight everyone. And then Tony Green got injured, and he didn't know whether to put me in or not. He said, I think you should put him in, you know. I think he's going to be a player. And he put me in, and I've never looked back since. And I've played all the games after that. And it's amazing, really, when one minute you think, you know, you'd be lucky to play for Bury, and the next minute I'm playing in the FA Cup final. Yeah. I'm 74.
That was kind of making you when you played. That's what almost got, well, did it get you moved to Liverpool off the bat? You moved to Liverpool in 74 after
that's
that
right,
Cup
that's
final,
right,
didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. But it was, I played in the final. Funny story, really. I played in the final, and, you know, because we didn't have a lot of money then. It wasn't, you know, like, it wasn't like it is now. We were on about 50 quid a week or something, 60 quid a week. And then going to Cup finals was magnificent, really. But you know, anyway, the game went. I played quite well, probably, you know, because we were so bad. I got the man of the match, and I thought, oh, what? And there was another car. And I went, oh, I'm going to have one. I've got one now. I'm going to get another one. And then afterwards, I've won it. Charlie McDermott was the man of the match. For Newcastle, car for him and all that. And I thought, well, brilliant, get rid of this car, and I got that one. And then Bobby Moncair, remember the great Bobby Moncair, great player. He was the captain, and he says, oh no, what we do, we buried in the pool. And it goes through, you know, between all the players. Well, I said, surely you're not going to give Malcolm MacDonald anything. He's not getting no money, surely, because of the way he played last week. He was absolutely useless. And he said, we're going to give him money for being useless. And what he actually, in my eyes, and a lot of people's eyes, he actually won it for Liverpool by what he said before the game. He was going to, Phil Thompson and Tommy Smith, he's going to do this to them, he's going to do that to Liverpool, I'm going to knock them all around the place, they won't be able to catch me. He was useless, absolutely. And he was having shots, and they were going like 50 yards over the goal. He had two shots like that of 50 yards over, and I mean 50 yards. A long way from the goal to the crowd, innit? You know, Wembley. He hit the crowd every time. It was crap, honestly. And then, he was going to get a little bit of my hard gains, you know, because I'd won man of the match, got the money, he'd done the equivalent in money, and he got paid for.
You're raging
for me playing well.
But that cup final, then you get your move to Liverpool. So within 4 years of you, no, that's within yeah, within 4 years of you moving to Liverpool, you've got two European Cups. And you've got two league titles. Yeah. And reading what the feudal lads have been saying, you actually took a little bit of a time to settle at Liverpool. Yeah. It was almost if you had that carefree attitude probably went against you when you've gone to Liverpool a little bit, did it?
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Maybe I was a bit overawed at the time.
Yeah, but when you support, it's your club, yeah?
Yeah, it's my club. It's where I'm born and bred. Scotland Road in Liverpool. Went to Liverpool and Kirby when I was about 8. And it was a tough upbringing, you know. But we always find money to go and watch Liverpool play. And they were my idols, playing against them in an FA Cup final. I was in awe of it, really. But luckily enough, I got over that, you know. And I just wanted to win for Newcastle. That's all I was concerned about. Wasn't concerned about Liverpool. But they were just, you know, I'm on the pitch with Kevin Keegan. I couldn't believe it. You know, Emily News, Tommy Smith, Phil Thompson.
What's it like now? You're best mates with Kevin Keegan, though. What's that like now, then?
I know. I mean, we got on great together. We always have, you know. But at that particular time, it was just, they were my idols, really, if you like. And before that, Ian St. John and Ian Callaghan, who I see now on match days. They were, you know, little did I know at the time, I didn't think I'd be overawed because I thought, well, I've done it before, played in the FA Cup final, played in the First Division with Newcastle, I should be a doddle. Well, it took me 2 years to find out I couldn't. Because I played the first game was against Everton at Goodison Park. The game was absolutely atrocious and I was even worse. And I stayed in for about four games and then I was in and out for the next 2 years. Yeah. And I wanted to leave the club. I just wanted to play football. It wasn't against all about money like it is now. It's, you know, I just wanted to play football and with my idols. But I was probably overawed a little bit. I'm sure I was at some stage where, you know, one minute I'm in the dressing room with Bury players And then, well, and that's no disrespect to them.
Yeah.
But then you're in with superstars, Kevin Keegan's and Emily News.
Was there anything in the fact, was it, even speaking to lads over the years, like your Soonesses and all these sort of lads, it was like how much they wanted to beat you. You had that test, home and away, no matter who it was, you were the best. Yeah. So you almost had to change your game at times and then adapt to different situations and then go and impose yourself on them. It was. I suppose that was different for you as well, that you've had to come to that environment from where you've been at Bury and at Newcastle, where it's not necessarily, you say it's not disrespect them, but it's not Liverpool.
No.
It's not that intense that you've got around every game there, really, is it?
No, I agree. Oh, I totally agree, you know, but it did take me a long time, 2 years, maybe even a little bit longer, you know. And what changed it really all was, you know, I played in the European Cup, 77 European Cup final, scored a goal and that and all that, but I still never thought I was going to be a regular, even till then. And then, because I wasn't a goal scorer really.
Why didn't you think you were going to be a regular though? What was in your head at that? Because you said you'd gone into Newcastle, you couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Wherever you've been, you couldn't care less. So why, after you've scored in a European Cup final, why then do you think you're still not?
Because they had so many good players. And, you know, they had so many good players. You know, like Peter Cormack, Brian Hall, they were, you know, very good players, you know, and I was taking their place. And now, and then, it, as I say, it took me 2 years. Played against, we won the European Cup. I'd score maybe 4 a season, 5 a season or something like that. And Bob Paisley was telling me before, you've got to play the Liverpool way. I didn't know what the Liverpool way was. And he said, well, you know, you've got to learn just pass and move and all this. And he didn't say too much, so I thought, right, I'll go and see Ronnie Moran, who unfortunately died a few weeks ago, God bless him.
Yeah.
He died a few weeks ago, and I went to see Ron, and he was a hard taskmaster, you know. I'd go, Ronnie, you know, I've been in the scene with the gaffer today, and he said, how am I going to get in the team? I've asked him how am I getting in the team. He said, you've got to play Liverpool away. I said, can he give us any, you know? He said, I know what I would do, son. He said, well, you work around for yourself, son. I went, I'm deflated again. And then, won the European Cup, then we played Hamburg in the, it was a Super Cup, called the European Cup, yeah. Winners, and they won the European, UEFA or something. And we played against them. We beat them 6-0 at home, and I scored 3. And I always remember John Toshak the day after in the press saying he's found his position, getting forward and getting back, because I had a good engine and all that, getting forward, and he can score goals. And that's when I realised I could score all goals. And when I did that, I started getting 20 a season. You know, we were going from like 4 and 5 a season to 20, 21. Yeah. Well, that might be in a couple of, maybe not all in the league, but they were all in, you know, cup competitions. And I realised I could do it. But all the time I was at Liverpool, from 74 to when I left in 82, I never ever, even when I won the Player of the Year, the Double Player of the Year, in 1980, I never ever felt I was a regular.
Yeah, I must say now, we're running out of time because they're going to throw us out of here soon. All right. So you're being dragged away. But you were the first player to win the PFA and the Football Writers Player of the Year award, which is an incredible achievement. You look back at these sort of things, that's incredible. But the one thing I of course, known about you watching football over the years as well. And Kevin Keegan, I'm even talking about this, you've been together so many times, and Kevin Keegan's montage of goals always goes on. But he said, I can't live with Terry. The goals that Terry McDermott scored, and anyone listening only needs to go on YouTube and look at these goals. The goal against Tottenham in the FA Cup, the little flick up, the volley in the top corner. But the one that I always remember was that the cross from Steve Highway, was it? Johnson's ball out wide, the cross from Highway, and you arriving. That's what I remember Terry McDermott being like. And that was, you say, that was almost like your forte, arriving from deep. Right. But what a goal that was.
Well, it was, yeah. But, not because it was me who scored or got at the end of it. It was me, it was because of the build-up to it, the corner from them. Ray Clement out to Kenny Dalglish, Kenny Dalglish to Dave Johnson. Dave Johnson is a great ball. And Steve Ivory, to this day, I do know why he crossed it from the position he was in. He should have really run in the box with the ball because there was no one near him. But he didn't hit it straight away. And I was just at the end, and believe me, I wasn't good in the air. And I just let it hit me. I just let it hit me, closed my eyes, and went right in the roof of the net. And everyone now says it's the best goal they've ever seen. Bob Paisley actually said after the game, it's the best goal he's ever seen at Anfield. Not because I scored it, because of the build-up to it, you know. But I scored better goals than that, you know, but...
Yeah, well, it's an incredible thing. I think we are running out of time with you. There's so much we can talk about, your time at Cork City when you played over here.
Loved it, by the way.
The one thing I do have to mention to you, you got a fondness for a drink, Terry. I think that's
Where'd you get that from?
That crops up regularly through the book. But there's so many different things as well. But it's more so your relationship with Kevin Keegan. Well, Kevin Keegan, he's mentioned it's almost like chalk and cheese. He was one way. So I always used to allow Terry to do his own thing. Allow Terry to have a drink when he's assistant, and he used to deal with all the problems that he had with the players. Mm. But I mentioned before, I think of you synonymous really with Newcastle during that spell, during the really good days at Newcastle, during that great spell that you had as well. It must have been fabulous to be part of Newcastle during that great period that you had over, what, 4, 5, 6 years, whatever it was.
Yeah, but we were called the entertainers, and rightly so. They were brilliant. You know, don't forget about me, forget about Kevin. They were absolutely brilliant, these players, honestly. And how we never won the league that year. And we should have done, you know. The best team always wins it, because they finish at the top. But for that one year, we were the best team in the country by a million miles. And we just lost our way. We were probably about 6 or 7 games to go. And the one against Liverpool, we were going to be 4-3. I mean, things like we were winning at Blackburn, winning 1-0. A Geordie actually scored 2 goals against us, and both of them in injury time. So there we got beat 2-1, so we got 9 points there. We were winning 1-0 against Notts Forest. Ian Warren hit one roof of the net from about 30 yards. Normally they go iron wide, went right in the roof of the net, took 2 points off us. So there was other things. It wasn't just a Liverpool game, it was other things. But the football that we played, and I've said to many people, and I'm sure you might have heard me of saying it, you know, if you haven't got a good dressing room, you don't win nothing.
Yeah.
I don't care how many good players you got, you don't win nothing if you haven't got a good dressing room. And we had a fantastic dressing room. And Liverpool in our day were fantastic. We were fantastic players, but fantastic camaraderie we had. And not everyone liked each other. But once we got on that pitch, and they were a different breed of people, you know. They're different, you know, like Emlyn with Tommy Smith. They never really got on. But we're on the pitch, we'd never know.
Mm. We're out of time, Terry. We are out of time.
I do apologise.
You've got to know. I could sit here all day talking to you. You know that as well. We had some great times when we were at Huddersfield together. Yeah. But, yeah, we've run out of time. But, Terry, thanks very much for coming in. It was great stuff here today, and good luck with the book. We should have actually mentioned your book.
I don't even know what it's called. No, yeah. it's called Terry Mack.
Terry Mack. Well,
an hard one.
Go and buy the book anyway. Thanks very much, Terry.
Pleasure.
Thank you very
pleasure,
much.
Pleasure, mate. Great to see you.
Terry Mack, speaking with Kev earlier. It's a pity you had to go.
We need more. We need another half an hour at least for Terry Mack. We needed to know some of these stories of Terry Mack out with the lads at Liverpool, out with the lads at Newcastle, a bit of the Cork City days as well. I had a tweet earlier on sent to me as well. We'd like to know a little bit more about that as well. But great insight there, I suppose, as well, to a youngster starting in those days, going to Newcastle, then to his boyhood club, and going to Liverpool, and had so much success during his spell there at Liverpool. Yeah.
Somebody says, Brian in Cork, naturally. Don't forget, Terry played a few games in Cork City in their first League of Ireland season, 84-85. Mm. Yeah. I saw Terry McDermott play for Cork in 85 and even got him to sign my programme afterwards. Happy days, Stephen Cork. And then there are texts in. I don't even know if they're true. I don't think Terry Mack will care either way. Terry Mack once asked if he fancied a move from Liverpool to London. He replied the only London clubs he was interested in were Stringfellows and Hippodrome.
Again, I can see it. Again, it's probably true. It's probably true. Whatever's been said there, yes, they're probably true.
Hippodrome?
The Hippodrome, yeah.
Not familiar with it?
It's one of the big clubs, the fancy clubs, yeah.
Right.
That way, yeah.
Okay.
Of course, you're familiar with Stringfellows, though, Joe, yeah?
Well, I'm aware of Stringfellows, yeah.
Right.
Declan McDermott on Twitter. My surname is McDermott, and my old man had a tash and curly hair. And told me he was Terry's cousin, and I swallowed it hook, line and sinker. Next in. I get what you're saying, though, with McDermott about the humility and understated. Like, he waltzed in today here with 3 European Cups, 6 league titles, and a Players' Player of the Year, and, like, very kind of understated fella.
Very much
very
like that.
Understated.
Very much like that, and... Again, I only work with him. First thing he said to me to come in, you play for us at Huddersfield. Yeah, we're unbeaten. I never lost a league game playing for Huddersfield. I played about 20 odd games. Never lost playing for them, but we had a great spell towards the end of the season. But good characters. But it was shaped largely by Terry. Terry used to work the dressing room to an extent for Lee Clark. And he was great to work and be alongside, but never once did you ever hear him, even to the lads, talk about what he had achieved, what he'd done through his career, where he'd been, honestly, you didn't hear a thing about that. And
do you think most lads would have been aware?
Probably not. Probably not. Some of them wouldn't have been.
Might have been surprised to find out that guy's got 3 European Cups, Players Player of the Year, 6 league titles.
Totally.
You know, the guy who's just messing around with the head tennis.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's certainly what it would have been, Joe, yeah. But he just didn't. There's no airs and grace about him. Great laugh as well. You know, he'd come up in like a game of cards on the bus, a bit of a laugh. Yeah. That was Terry.
I would mention it every day to them.
Yeah.
3 European Cups, lads. Me.
Yeah, I know you would. I can imagine you would. And the league titles now. League titles not good enough for me. None of that.
Wouldn't even mention that. So we're into the last 4 minutes. Time for Bridge. Chelsea 3, Southampton 1. If you're just tuning in, it was Hazard. And then a bit of hope for the neutrals and for Spurs, because Romeo equalised for Southampton, who Kev was watching the game.
Yeah, John Terry's just come on for Chelsea, actually. Yeah, just getting a nice little send-off for him tonight. Got a good reception coming on.
No doubt. Romeo equalised anyway on 24 minutes. And then the decisive moment, maybe just on the 45th minute plus 40 seconds before halftime, Gary Cahill header after a corner and a bit of pressure, made it 2-1. And then Costa, 53 minutes, brilliant header, 3-1. So that's where we are.
Under pressure as well, that spell. Under pressure, I think that was the key one, the Gary Cahill goal. That just almost killed Southampton right on the cusp of half-time.
I tell you what I noticed tonight, that Matic can't stop taking shots. He's just had another shot there, Matic.
Yeah, and shanked it wide, scuffed it into the ground. The one thing as well, Conte said on Saturday, didn't he? I keep telling him, you've got to shoot more.
Yeah.
That's why he doesn't shoot more.
Well, so John Terry on. We're taking a short break. There'll be a little more Newcastle for you, because we have North East football correspondent for the Daily Mail, Craig Hope, on, because Newcastle are back in the big time.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to AIR, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action, brought to you by AIR Sport.
So that was an unbelievable goal from Diego Costa during the outbreak.
Yeah, he's gone. He's the problem for Antonio Conte. It's Diego Costa. He's not scoring. Chelsea's problems will lie there. I don't think many people actually see the work that he does, Diego Costa. And again, worked so hard tonight. He's been brilliant and he's got his rewards tonight. You mentioned before the header. But the second one, he's made a great run out to the left-hand side. So he's in the inside left channel. He gets a couple of the Southampton defenders stood up, plays a lovely little 1-2 initially with Eden Hazard, then a second 1-2 with Pedro, drives into the area, lovely feet where he skips past a couple of Southampton defenders, and then he gives Fraser Forster to the eyes, plays it to his near post. What a finish. Brilliant goal from a brilliant player. Yeah. He's been superb again this season.
Craig Hope is the North East football correspondent for the Daily Mail. Evening, Craig.
Evening, guys.
Hi, Craig. Have you been watching any of Chelsea this evening or otherwise engaged?
No. Listen, I cover the North East of England. I don't watch good teams. I don't do that to myself. I'm not going to... That would be a form of torture, watching a team like Chelsea play. So I just stick to Sunderland and Middlesbrough. We've got Newcastle, of course, as well, who were promoted last night.
Yeah, it would have been nice, Craig, probably, to get your take on. I was reading over the weekend that Diego Costa's gone. He's a huge problem for Antonio Conte. I've read it in 2 or 3 newspapers at the weekend, but anything but that boy.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad problem to have in these parts right now. I mean, I'm covering the Sunderland versus Middlesbrough game tomorrow night. Yeah, the battle for 19th, as we're calling it up here. So we wouldn't mind Diego Costa in these parts right now, that's for sure.
So we just had Terry McDermott on there.
Mm.
Kev was speaking to him, and just time was against them in the interview. So they didn't get to cover too much on the glory days at Newcastle. Keegan... Mm. He was there in 92 to 98, that in that first spell as assistant manager, McDermott. Is he, presumably he's a bit of a legend in those parts as well?
He is, Terry, yeah. He was always known as the buffer. He was just that, and Kevin will be able to sort of attest this. Just that guy who exists between the manager and the dressing room. Not that Keegan needed someone like that. Yeah, Kevin was full of charisma, had a fantastic relationship with the players himself, but certainly Terry existed there as that connection between sort of the hierarchy and in the dressing room. It's no surprise today to see he's still best of mates with the likes of Alan Shearer, with the likes of Rob Lee, and all the rest of them there. So Terry's a great character. He's someone I've been fortunate to spend a lot of time in his company in recent years, and he really is. He's got a lot of good stories to tell. I know his book was released just a few weeks back there. But great character, very well thought of in these parts. And he's unique, Terry, in that he's somebody who is genuinely adored and revered by two sets of supporters in Newcastle and Liverpool. So no, a great man.
Yeah, Craig, he's probably just slightly before both our times, really, not wanting to give your age away in any way. But just as a player, the thing that's in my mind, always thinking of Terry Mack, thinking about him, the sidekick to Kevin Keegan and how successful they were. But you can't overlook the fact is how he was taken in as Kevin Keegan's assistant because of how good he'd actually been when he was a player there in two spells, wasn't he?
Look, it's right you say that as well, because Terry McDermott is one of these players who your dad or your uncles or people who are maybe sort of 20, 25 years older, they'll always say when you're talking about him, good player, he was a good player. Don't forget he was a good player, because the role he's sort of taken on since as Kevin Keegan's number two, Kevin Keegan's sidekick, has almost overtaken, really, memory of him as a player. And that's probably wrong. As you say, people of our generation don't really appreciate what he really did achieve. And you look back at some of those goals. I think it was the goal of the season contender, wasn't it, from the late '70s? And you realise just what a good player he was—a sort of a forerunner to a Frank Lampard type, somebody who could do it at both ends of the park and popped up in those sorts of positions with all sorts of goals. So a tremendous player as well.
Yeah, we want to ask you about the current situation at Newcastle. But Kev, a late goal for Southampton.
Yes, Southampton, good ball played into the area. I didn't actually quite see who got the header.
Bertrand.
Bertrand was it with the header in the end? Brilliant header, actually. Got in front of Gary Cahill. Diego Costa just been named man of the match. I don't want to go on about him too much, Joel, for you, but he is man of the match tonight. But it was a brilliant header, yeah. Just a glancing header into the corner, but meaningless in the end. Chelsea, totally dominant, really good win for them.
Yeah, full time. So, good win for Chelsea ultimately. So, Craig, talk to us about this Newcastle season. We saw them beat Preston last night 4-1. They have secured automatic promotion back to the Premier League. Is this now, has it been a thoroughly enjoyable season? Is there disappointment that they're probably going to lose out to Brighton? Or is this job done? Everybody's happy around St James's Park?
What do you use the phrase there? Job done. Absolutely. I think my intro in today's Daily Mail from the Match Report last night was, if you were releasing the end of season DVD, the title of it would be Job Done. It hasn't been the return of the entertainers, a la Keegan and McDermott of 92. Absolutely not. It's just been functional. And you asked there, has it been enjoyable? Well, I've got a lot of friends who've got season tickets at Newcastle, and I've covered the fair amount of the matches this season. And if I'm being perfectly honest, it hasn't really been enjoyable. It hasn't been free-flowing football. It hasn't been smashing teams for 4 and 5. It's St James's. And last night almost was symptomatic of the season as a whole. For the first 45 minutes, Preston played them off the park for large parts, and yet Newcastle going to the break 2-1 up very much against the run of play. And it's been like that for a lot of the campaign, really, especially at home at St James's Park, where they really have struggled. I mean, they've lost 5 games at St James's, and supporters in recent weeks have certainly been getting a little bit frustrated, a little bit anxious. There's been a few more groans going around the stadium. And even last night, it wasn't party atmosphere. It wasn't a carnival. There was no stewards weren't having to resist against a pitch invasion or anything like that. It was almost just job done, captures it perfectly. And that's why I led my report on it last night. But Rafa Benitez never promised to go up in a blaze of goals and glory. All he ever said was that the ultimate aim was promotion at the end of the day. Now, of course, to lead the division by 5 points as recently as last month, and it now looks as if they're going to lose out on the title, that will be a little bit galling, absolutely. But ultimately, yeah, just going up was all Rafa had to do. And he quite rightly says, you know, come August, we won't be looking back and talking about 5 home defeats or going up in seconds.
Yeah, the one big thing, the story around Newcastle over the last 4 or 5 months, Craig, has been, will Rafa Benitez stay? If they go up, is he going to stay on? And it seems like a damp note, doesn't it, really, considering... Mm. But we know the way that Newcastle has been, the way that Mike Ashley has been over the last few years, Rafa Benitez is clearly not happy with one or two things that have happened regarding predominantly been the transfer policy of the club. But he has got a lot right within the two windows that he's had in the job, though, Craig, hasn't he? But how realistic is it to say that he will still be here at the start of the Premier League season come August?
No, it's a good question. Listen, last night in the post-match press conference, you were sat there and you're all tapping away doing your rewrites, and you've just got the little bit of space there to insert quotes from Rafa, you know, along the lines of, it's wonderful, it's marvellous, the players are fantastic, the fans are fantastic. And he was asked a question, will you still be in charge next season? And he could have given a diplomatic answer. He could have said yes. He could have said anything. And he replied, who knows, this is football. And straight away, the whole mood and our agenda changed. And you saw sort of back page headlines today, and Rafa throws his tune feature in doubt, and some supporters thought it was needless. I know one or two of my colleagues thought, why has he chosen tonight of all nights to do that? But it was the first power play, really, political power play, in terms of what over the next few weeks will probably drag on well into the summer, in terms of Rafa using the press and the like to get his own way with Mike Ashley, because he won't stay. If Rafa sits down with the owner and is told there's only X amount of pounds to spend and he hasn't got total control or final say over transfers, Rafa will walk, and that's a very real danger. You go back to January, Rafa wasn't happy at all that the club refused to sanction the re-signing Van Ross Townsend from Crystal Palace. So this has been rumbling in the background for 3 or 4 months now. Now, I understand that Mike Ashley has made efforts to sort of calm the situation, and of course, I think he would prefer Rafa to remain in charge, but they're going to have to reach a sort of compromise in terms of budget and control going into the summer. And at the moment, it is massively up in the air before those talks have taken place. So it's one to watch over the next few weeks, absolutely.
Right, interesting, because I had read that things had been sorted out, that they'd had some kind of summit or two. Mm. There were two recent transfer summits to discuss summer spending, and they went positively, and harmony had broken out. But listening to you, it sounds a bit more volatile. Benitez spent 55 million on 12 players last summer, although that proved to be a 30 million euro or 30 million pound profit, because they sold 85 million worth of players, as you might expect with a newly relegated team. And then, as you mentioned, January, there was nothing. So it will be very interesting to see what happens. I'm surprised that Benitez is so willing to walk. Does he look at the squad and just think, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this, that if that squad as is basically goes up to the Premier League, it's fairly doomed?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say he's willing to walk. I think Rafa would absolutely prefer to stay, and I think it will be a last resort whereby he does walk. And certainly little power plays like we witnessed last night, it's all part of the bigger picture with him to ultimately get what he wants from the owner. So he doesn't want to walk. He's not unhappy. He is very happy. And scenario A for Rafa Benitez is being given £100 million this summer and able to go out and sign 8 or 9 new players. That's definitely what he would prefer. But if he goes into next season and he's thinking, listen, I haven't got enough money here to keep this squad in the division, he's not going to sit around and let his reputation take a hit with a second relegation in 3 years. Absolutely not. Mm. And he looks at that squad there now, and he knows it's not good enough to survive in the Premier League. It's been limping towards the line in the Championship. It hasn't been limping. It's been crawling towards the line. If it hadn't been for the collapse of the likes of Huddersfield and Leeds and Reading to an extent in recent weeks, Newcastle would probably still be clinging on to that second place, or even worse, looking at a scenario whereby they go down the playoff route. But at the end, also it's important to remember as well, I think the nature of the stuttering finish to the season in some ways has strengthened Rafa's hand, and I don't think he particularly minds in some ways that a lot of the shortcomings have been exposed in the past few weeks.
And Craig, if he is given the money to spend, does he have total control over who he spends it on? Because Graeme Carr, we're all familiar with Graeme Carr, he's appeared by Ashley's side at recent matches. Reportedly, the pair, him and Ashley, share some misgivings over the ages of some of Benitez's transfer targets. So who actually controls the targets? Whatever about the amount of money that Benitez is going to get?
Well, it's, for want of a better phrase, it's almost sort of transfer by committee. Ultimately, they won't sign a player if Rafa doesn't want them to. Previous managers, the likes of Kevin Keegan, famously had players put upon him. And that is why Kevin ultimately won a constructive dismissal case. Rafa won't have that. He won't have players signed for him and told to integrate him into the squad. Definitely not. But at the same time, there will be input from others. Rafa will probably identify the bulk of the targets, but they won't be signing players without it being signed off by others at the club as well. So it's a little bit murky, it's a little bit muddy in terms of the hierarchical system. That is probably still to be determined, and it's something Rafa will want to talk about with Mike Ashley when they sit down in 10 days' time. You are right there to mention the concern over ages. Mike Ashley's preferred transfer policy is players of 25 and under with a sell-on value. Now, Rafa, if he sees someone for 31 or 32-year-old who he sees fit to fit into his squad, then absolutely he will recommend it to sign him. So a lot of that is still to be determined, but the presence of Graeme Carr is a little unnerving from a supporter point of view, because that is one one element I think which Rafa isn't necessarily comfortable with. So a lot's to be determined on that front.
Yeah, I'll probably switch to a more positive note then. Just you mentioned earlier on about the supporters. I've got a few, I'll say it lightly here, but I've got a few jury mates who huge Newcastle fans, go to the games, hugely positive about the way that it's gone since Benitez has taken over. I know, albeit getting relegated last season, not in his hands that, of course. But where are the club going now? Because
is Ashley popular with them?
Still not. But Benitez is. Now, I probably want to put to you then, Craig. Now then, so they seem to me like they're in a position on the pitch as good as they've been in a long time, with the full backing of the supporters. There's not that real negativity around the side. They've got a manager that they trust. They've not had that the real trust in a manager, I don't think, for a long time up there. So why then does anybody need to upset that? Why can't Newcastle now go on? It goes back to your age. Oh, it's Newcastle again. But you do feel though, with Benitez and what can be done there, they seem to be on the cusp of something very, very big in the next few years.
Well, Kevin, you've just summed it up absolutely perfectly. I dare say that some of your listeners in Ireland are scratching their head and thinking, well, hold on a minute, where's this conversation going here? They should be talking about promotion, they should be talking about investment in the summer, they should be talking about the feel-good factor, Rafa Benitez, a world-class manager, yet here we are having a conversation about Rafa Benitez potentially walking away from Newcastle United just 24 hours after the regained promotion to the Premier League. It's crazy, and it sounds a little simple just to say, well, this is Newcastle United, the club who they've got a propensity to shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, it's an upheaval in turmoil, and self-implosion is a favourite pastime up here. But that's just the way it is. And with an owner like Mike Ashley, who has never really fully got the whole football concept, that is always likely to happen. And listen, I think Rafa will stay. I do think we'll kick off next season with Rafa in charge, and the owner will ultimately give him the bulk of what he wants. But I wouldn't be at all surprised in the slightest if we had a situation where by 3 or 4 weeks down the line it was announced that Rafa had walked away from Newcastle, just like Kevin Keegan did 5 or 6 years ago. So no, it is a shame, it is a pity, because as you say, everything is right. You rewind to last March when Rafa came in, he inherited a poisonous club, a club which had become inward-looking. It was consuming itself. It had an awful relationship with the press, with its own supporters. It had alienated its own fan base. Rafa changed all that, and I know there's been some criticism of Rafa this season for the quality of the football, and I mentioned it earlier that it hasn't been fantastic on the pitch, but without Rafa Benitez, this season doesn't happen. Without Rafa Benitez, this season plays out to a backdrop of supporter protesting, dwindling crowds, and you know, graffiti on bedsheets. Rafa's changed all of that, and people shouldn't really forget that. To sit and lose him would just be such a shame. It really would be cataclysmic. But you know, fingers crossed that doesn't happen, and I'm probably confident that it won't.
Craig, thanks for all that.
Thanks, Craig.
Excellent. Cheers, guys.
Craig Hope there, North East football correspondent for the Daily Mail and the Mail on Sunday. Tom Dunn is in. Hello.
Am I being dragged in to the Mail crush? Well, it's that type thing.
Kevin Kilbane wouldn't cooperate, so if you want to volunteer,
did you not
some
cooperate
names,
at all?
No.
He seems unable to identify a good-looking man.
That's not what I said. It's almost as if Joe, every time he'll see him, and he's judging you by your look, basically. That's what Joe's doing. And I just he's a fellow, I want to chat to him, get to him, good lad him.
Yeah.
Not so sure about him. That's the way, I'd like to make sure that I get to, I wouldn't necessarily look at them.
You'd never be struck by someone and go, God, he's very good looking.
No, yeah, wouldn't
never.
So no.
If Maldini walked in here, you'd just think, oh, there he is, great player.
I'd be thinking what a player that boy was, yeah.
I would think beautiful tan, piercing blue eyes.
Twice in my life, once in feeling Sting, waiting a good while for him, had given up hope, had started to go into the what'll I have for tea mode, how do I get out of here without getting stuck in the traffic, this interview isn't happening, take down the cameras. And then suddenly the door opened and I literally went, wow, they're piercing blue eyes,
wow.
If ever I saw piercing blue eyes. And also very tall and athletic and just,
right.
I felt like he was from a different species. I felt
really, yeah.
Yeah, I felt he'd walked into a room of malformed Irish people, potato famine visible, yeah. And then the Sting, really, really
untanned,
completely untanned.
So Sting overcame the receding hairline.
Yeah,
he just looked.
This is about 15 years ago. He played in Marley Park,
yeah.
So the receding hairline wasn't too bad. But he just looked super fit and healthy.
That one question there says it all about Joel, talking about his receding hairline. You see, I wouldn't necessarily... It's
just
irrelevant,
Joel.
I
just didn't expect Sting.
It's irrelevant, though, that, isn't it?
Who's your number two?
It was the Fountains of... Not Fountains of Wayne, the Kings of Leon. Kings of Leon. I played the first record of Ferb. I thought it was brilliant. Hadn't really paid much attention to them. And then one that walked in and against the piercing blue eyes, it must be obviously, that would have been
his
thing, isn't it?
His weakness.
And again,
Caleb,
what's
his surname, Caleb?
Yeah, one of their
followers.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
I tell you what, Tom, the text machine tonight lit up. Like even now, Adam Scott, lads, I'd take him out for a steak dinner anyway. Really? Dreamboat says Dermo.
Yeah. Gabriel Einze.
From United.
From footballing world.
Argentinian. Well, I was just saying, though, you start a conversation about best looking musicians. You're just. Content all night for you.
You will.
The people want to name them, but it has to be men naming their men crushes.
Yes,
we're not just talking about the other sex.
No, it's an uncomfortable thing. It's an appreciation of God. He's very good.
Well, I'm not sure Kevin Kliman will ever come back.
I wouldn't introduce him to someone.
Elvis Presley, maybe. I'll go with Elvis. Yeah.
You really are. You're setting an impossibly high standard there.
There you
Kevin.
Go. I'll stick with Elvis.
That's and he's dead as well. So that gets you out of jail
there
as well.
There you go.
There's a book in that. There is. I've loads of music, but I was listening to the Terry McDermott interview.
Oh, yeah.
The World Is Your Lobster. That's from Minder, isn't it? Arthur Daly.
I don't know.
Minder.
I mean, it was
very
it was...
famously.
Okay.
And I noticed that he mentioned cars a few times, and that's all about. He's a second-hand cars salesman.
Right.
So I wonder, is that where it comes from? Just maybe.
Could be. Good
who knows? It's 79. I Googled it out of interest. It's 79 to 80, so it was right on when he was a footballer. Maybe it was a phrase people. Maybe
and he did have a Ford Capri as well. So
I heard him mention that as well. Yeah, a nice car to get. If I was a footballer, I would have wanted a Capri. Yeah. That was the one.
Yeah, he says as well. All those ex footballers. It's not about the money. It's not about the cars. He gets $2,000 signing on fee when he goes to Newcastle. What does he blow it on? A Ford Capri. There you go.
It's hardly wasting money. In fairness, all those long songs were all brilliant last night. So I'm playing more of them.
Right.
And. Pat Nevin talking about the there has me listening to the there all day. So
right.
I've loads more of that.
Excellent. Right.
They're an excellent band.
Tom Dunn on the way after 10.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to AIR with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by AIR Sport.
So Chelsea back 7 points clear of Spurs. Spurs game in hand. That's where we are.
Yeah, we were thinking they could have been a slip up tonight. Realistically, I don't think we all really thought it, did we?
It's very assured from Chelsea.
It was a good performance from them, and and all round Hazard, brilliant. Costa, they were just in good form tonight. Fabregas as well actually played well tonight, starting.
Interestingly, Fabregas in the build up to this game was talking about Hazard, saying in terms of ability, he was second only in his opinion to Messi, and the thing he needed to do was become more selfish. And this was put to Conte in the pre-match press conference. And Conte flipped his lid when he heard this.
Yeah.
I don't think that a player like Messi is a selfish player. The best players in the world don't exist with the team. For me, it's sad when I listen to this. That one player must be more selfish to reach the top level. That's not my idea of football. I'll never understand this. Never in my team. I don't want selfish players. I'd prefer to lose a game than to have a selfish player. I don't want this. I can't accept this. You think Fabregas is at home going, oh, crap. Shouldn't have said that. I just didn't mean anything by it, boss. So that was Conte's reaction when it was like, Fabregas said
it's
this.
Good,
what
though.
Do you think?
It's good. You even hear managers talking of players being selfish. Just seen the little graphic in front of us. Diego Costa, it's taken him 85 games to get to 50 Premier League goals, only second to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. So, it shows the impact from him as well. Again, not wanting to go on too much about Costa. But it's quite interesting that he reacts like that, though, Conte, isn't it? It's interesting. He has different reactions to different things a lot. You would think something like that, you can just let it go over your head because your player said it, but he has to react to it. And it shows the character he's trying to instill there at Chelsea. It's good.
There's a few bits and pieces we don't really have time to get too much into. Gareth Bale out of Real Madrid's semi-final. Which is a blow to them, obviously. And you spotted as well, Johnny Walters, coming to the end of his time at Stoke.
Yeah, I think the report is he's becoming frustrated of his lack of first team football or the starts that he's been getting. That's the one thing I think is frustrating. So he's set to talk in the summertime to see what the story is really. And it's an interesting one with John because he's certainly been one of our best players over the last 5 or 6 years, hasn't he? He's done superb for us.
Well, in the qualification campaign for Euro 2016, he was our player of the campaign.
Brilliant.
He was such a blow for us, effectively, when he went into Euro 2016 with an injury, but he does seem to have not aged, but just he's
well.
Not,
it's almost as if now Stoke are saying, right, we might need to move on to the next level.
Yeah.
It always when Stoke struggle for a result, who do they revert back to? It's Crouch and Walters, isn't it? And you see at the weekend, Walters sets up Crouch for a goal. That's the way it is with him. Or the week before, it was. So
I just don't think he can be running up and down the wing anymore.
No. No, probably physically. He might need to play through the middle. Yeah. Good target man. If he leaves, who'll take him? There'll be a lot of takers, I would imagine. I think some managers, you maybe look at someone like Pulis, I think, yeah, do a job for us for a year or two. And the age that he's at now, John Walters, he's probably thinking to himself, he's 33.
Yeah.
Can I now get a couple of years on my contract till I'm 35? I know I was thinking like that when I was his age. You're trying to prolong your career, but it's more about your length and your contract.
So you want to get 2 years?
He wants to get 2 years. Yeah. He want to try and see it through to your 35. And then as an outfield player, that'll be good for him, yeah, definitely.
Okay. We'll probably try and speak to Walters. He's always fairly decent about coming on the show, so I might chat to him towards the end of the season. So we're pretty much done this evening. Chelsea, as we mentioned, winners, back 7 points clear. If you're just tuning in, You Can podcast, Mike Ross from this evening, Keno Sullivan. We had John Weirtime talking tennis as well, Serena Williams and Nastasi. And if you're just tuning in, Kev was speaking with the brilliant Terry McDermott, and we played that earlier on if you want to download the full football show podcast. So that is us done. Tom Dunn is on the way, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Good luck.
Get my ball and he out of grass.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.